From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, baseless and unfounded conspiracy theories. That is what the Associated Press is calling the concerns that have been raised about the riots, which have enveloped cities from coast to coast. Claims have been made that they may be orchestrated and directed. Well, we'll soon find out as the Department of Justice is reportedly investigating the funding of organizers. But one aspect of this chaos, which needs no investigation, is the common factor of weak, spineless politicians that have failed to preserve order and have facilitated murder and mayhem. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas joins me in just a moment. And as Democratic-led cities sit in smoldering ruins, the media is claiming President Trump's law and order message is like his 2016 Build the Wall message, racist. Former Cincinnati Mayor Ken Blackwell is here to respond. The media has their perspective about the rioting and the unrest. The politicians have theirs. But what about the families and small business owners that have watched as their livelihoods have gone up in flames as a result of the lawless mobs? We'll talk with one of them, Scott Carpenter, whose family business, B&L Office Furniture in Kenosha, Wisconsin, was burned to the ground. Also, what do endorsements tell us about a political candidate? Well, frankly, quite a bit. We'll take a look at some of the endorsements that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have racked up, and what kind of policies and practices might those endorsements translate into? We'll talk about it here on Washington Watch a little bit later. Pray Vote Stand, 8 p.m. Wednesday night. That's right. Pray Vote Stand. That is our broadcast going into the election. So we'll have experts will be joining us to talk about voter integrity, election integrity, and voter fraud. Find out more, go to PrayVoteStand.org or you can go to TonyPerkins.org and follow the links over. While there is evidence to suggest an organizational connection between the riots that have made smoldering ruins out of businesses and governmental buildings in several U.S. cities, what is beyond question is the common connection between the various burned-out cities and weak politicians that have failed to uphold law and order. Joining me now to talk more about this is the senator from the state of Arkansas, Senator Tom Cotton. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's good to be on with you again.
Well, you have written about this in a piece that was published in on FoxNews.com, calling out the leadership in these cities. There seems to be a common factor in the cities that have been enveloped into in this chaos, and that is weak leadership.
Unfortunately, Tony, that's the case. If you look in these cities, it's almost invariably Democratic mayors who won't let their police do their job, and Democratic governors who won't call out the National Guard when it's necessary. You saw that in Wisconsin just last weekend. Shortly after that shooting, it was clear that there was going to be large gatherings in the evenings that could turn into, as they did, violent rioting, looting, and arson. There should have been an overwhelming show of force from the very beginning in Kenosha on the streets. That's the way you avoid the use of force, is to have police officers out in force, and if necessary, the National Guard, to make it clear to criminals that you will brook no violence against your citizens and against their property whatsoever.
Senator, let's go back to really the beginning of this, because actually Minneapolis has seen more disorder and rioting. Started there back with the shooting of George Floyd. But had the mayor there, Jacob Frey, had he stood with the police and upheld order, do you think that may have had an impact in all across the country in kind of keep containing this this chaos?
If the boy mayor of Minneapolis had in fact acted quickly to protect his citizens' lives and their property, then it may very well have had that effect, Tony. But one thing you've seen in Minneapolis, you've seen it in Kenosha now, you've seen it in Washington and New York and Chicago, is that these mayors and these governors let the rioting and looting begin, and then ultimately they finally decide to call out the police in force and, if necessary, the National Guard, and it stops. The only place that that hasn't happened is Portland, and not surprisingly, Portland is now approaching 100 straight days of violent unrest in the streets at night.
You know, I just think when the criminal element sees other people getting away with it and the Democratic leadership taking no action against them, I think they're inspired to do it themselves. But that also brings up another point, Senator Cotton, and I think you've raised this, others have raised this. I know Rand Paul has raised it, members of the House have raised it. And that is there a criminal conspiracy here? Is there evidence to suggest that there's an organizational connection between the riots in the various cities?
Tony, there's no doubt that there's a conspiracy between these criminals out on the streets. The question is whether that conspiracy goes higher to, say, the level of funding and outside agitators moving from city to city. There is pretty compelling evidence if you simply look at the arrests in some cities. I think recently in Kenosha, the arrests were 80 to 90% outside of Wisconsin. And the Kenosha Police Department also discovered a few vans on the city outskirts that had stocked up on gasoline and had incendiary devices with out-of-state license plates. Again, that suggests that there is a higher level of funding and coordination, that it's not just a spontaneous uprising of criminals in Kenosha or Chicago or Washington or New York or what have you. And the Department of Justice is working to get to the bottom of that.
Also, given the instability, and I mean, we go back to the 2016, we saw the allegations, the claims, and there's evidence to suggest that there was a foreign intervention or attempts to intervene in our elections. Is there an element that would suggest that maybe there are foreign governments that are taking advantage of this chaos in the opening that these local leaders, their weak response has provided?
Well, Tony, let me break that question down into two parts. So first, it's almost always the case that our adversaries like Russia and Iran and China will use moments like this to try to sow division and discord in our society. You can see that sometimes in their public statements or the statements of their press mouthpieces. Sometimes you see it on social media as well. Now, I'm not terribly concerned about, a few bot accounts on social media with 17 followers that say mean things about Americans. What I am concerned about, the second part of your question, is the possibility of actual agitators fomenting the violence. I haven't personally seen evidence of it, but it's something that Russia and China and Iran have been known to do in the past. If you look at the KGB and CIA files that have been opened over the years, they did exactly that kind of thing in the Cold War. So we keep an open eye.
Senator, did we lose you?
No, I'm right here, Tony.
Okay. So that would suggest that it's a possibility, but it goes back again pointing to the local officials that they're opening the door potentially to this by failing to uphold their responsibility to provide law and order.
Yeah, so Tony, like I said, I haven't seen evidence of that kind of actual instigators and agent provocateurs. That is, though, exactly the kind of thing that, say, Russia has done for decades, not just in the United States and in Europe. That's one reason why it's so important that local authorities are allowed by their politicians to cooperate with agencies like the FBI, who have counterintelligence expertise, in addition to expertise in stopping interstate violence and rioting and so on and so forth.
So this would, I would say, when we see what's happening across the country and happening in these cities, this puts America in a vulnerable position, knowing that we have enemies that would like to exploit these weaknesses, these divisions that we're seeing in our society.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Tony. Again, Russia has been doing this kind of thing for decades and decades and decades. You know, as I said, the KGB and CIA files that have been declassified showed that, for instance, the KGB had an active role in the nuclear freeze movement in the early 1980s. If you've seen ads or documentaries against hydraulic fracturing in America, there's a good chance that that is Russian propaganda backed as well, because Vladimir Putin doesn't want an energy-independent America. This is exactly the kind of thing that countries like Russia and China try to do, to use our openness and to use our individual freedoms against us. It's, again, one reason why it's so important that local authorities cooperate with the FBI that have the expertise to spot that kind of activity.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us, our guest in this first segment, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. So, Senator, two questions before we run out of time. Number one is when you assess the situation, and granted, I'm not asking you to get into any classified information, but just when you assess this with what's happening across America, how concerned are you at this point in terms of we're moving into an election where a nation that there's this confluence of, you know, economic downturn driven by the coronavirus, we've got the violence in the street. How concerned are you about the present state of America?
Tony, I'm very concerned. I mean, it's one thing to have different political opinions, to have political debates, to vote in a different way, but to have what are essentially left-wing militia on the street who aren't just burning down stores and burning American flags, but harassing diners on the street at outdoor restaurants harassing senators and RNC officials when they leave the White House last week. That cannot be tolerated in our democracy.
So that brings me to the second question, which you have spoken out on, given the fact that there you have this level of concern and you're not alone, that the president should do what is within the confines of the law and the Constitution to make sure that order is restored so that we can have law and order in the country.
Yeah, the president and the Department of Justice have tools. They're not as far-reaching as tools that local police departments and prosecutors have, but they should use those tools, and they have, in terms of making arrests and making and filing charges for violations of civil rights, or any time someone commits a federal crime in one of these riots, whether it's violating the Riot Act or violating the Veterans Memorial Preservation Act. Any time that we can bring federal charges against these criminals and make an example of them, take dangerous agitators off the street, we ought to do so, and the president is committed to doing that. What he needs more than anything, what Attorney General Bill Barr needs more than anything, though, is the cooperation of these local officials who would allow their police officers to work and do their job in concert with federal officers as well.
And if they don't?
If they don't, you're going to see more of like what we see in Portland. And I'm afraid that if Joe Biden's elected, Portland is going to be multiplied across cities all across America, not just cities, but towns like Kenosha, because this president is willing to tell Democratic mayors and governors, hey, you got to protect public safety. Joe Biden is not going to say that to these Democratic mayors and governors. Joe Biden will be a weak president who will bow in front of the mob.
I think the evidence would suggest that that is true. Senator Tom Cotton, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. On the other side of the break, the president's message, law and order. The media says that's a racist message. Is it? We'll talk with the former mayor of Cincinnati. Ken Blackwell is here next on Washington Watch. By the way, be sure and take the challenge. The challenge to pray, vote, and stand. Your voice needs to be heard. Your vote needs to be cast. And we all need to be praying. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Take the challenge.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics, and how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. I want to challenge you to take the challenge to pray, vote, and stand as we move into this election. Go to TonyPerkins.com and you can take the challenge and share it with your friends as well. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, it is more than obvious that the mask is off the media. Their anti-Trump bias is so blatant. Now, the AP released an analysis, came out today, which claims Trump's call for law and order, like his call in 2016 to build the wall, is a racist message. And I quote from them, quote, 4 years ago, it was build the wall, a simple yet coded mantra to white America that non-white outsiders threatened their way of life. This week, Trump has recentered his campaign on another three-word phrase that carries a similar racial dynamic, law and order, end quote. Joining me now, former mayor of the Queen City, Cincinnati, Ohio, and now FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, Ken Blackwell. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Tony, good to be with you.
So is protecting our borders and keeping our cities from burning, is that a racist message and position?
My response, Tony, is rubbish, hogwash, liberal psychobabble. These false claims and false narratives are harmful to the fabric, the social fabric of America. You know, Martin Luther King said it best in the mid-60s. He said then we were at a point where we had to choose between chaos or community. Right today, in 2020 America, we have a choice. Do we, in fact, choose chaos, or do we choose public safety and community? That's the choice. And to try to advance the false narrative and claims of the New York Times 1619 Project, which says that America is irreparably racist and must be fundamentally started all over again, is crazy.
Yeah. Well, and Ken, you know, as a former reporter, member of the media, I've always been supportive of the media, but it is beyond question the bias nature we now see in the media. I want to take another quote from this AP analysis of Trump's current position. It says this, quote, "The president's shifting message, which draws from Nixon's half-century-old political playbook, carries risk just 9 weeks before Election Day. First, it ignores the health and economic crisis affecting tens of millions of Americans under Trump's watch. Democrat Joe Biden has repeatedly accused Trump of surrendering to the pandemic, and the president's focus on isolated incidents of violence amid such widespread suffering threatens to reinforce Biden's point. The pandemic death toll exceeds 184,000 Americans on Tuesday with no end in sight," end quote. I mean, just look at what is woven into this. Nixon's half-year-old political playbook, trying to tie him to Nixon. And then talking about surrendering to the pandemic and isolated incidents of violence. Where is the truth in the media?
Tony, they wouldn't know if it smacked them upside the back of the head. Look, public safety, and this is what Trump has exposed. Public safety is not a political strategy. It is a leadership obligation.
It's a constitutional obligation for elected officials to uphold and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic.
Tony, you know, it's simple. You know, Americans embrace that fundamental truth. And what has backfired on the left and on Biden and the Democrats is that they have, in fact, chosen anarchy and disruption, and therefore they have decided, they have joined themselves with Antifa and Black Lives Matter. And what has really happened is that this attempt to take a statement of human dignity and worth, Black Lives Matter, and corrupt it with a Marxist strategy of disruption and fundamental change of our country and its institutions, it has backfired. And Americans are saying, one, we want to be safe. Two, organizations that have as a major objective the destruction of the nuclear family can't be about, you know, the social fabric of what has made us a great nation. And that is that local government has the and leaders have the responsibility to make sure that communities and streets are safe. They are failing. They are derelict in their duty, and the American people are going to, in fact, speak out strongly at the polls. And that's what has frightened not only Joe Biden, but the political left in this country and mainstream media.
Ken Blackwell, you and I have talked about this before, but I think what we see manifesting in the streets, in the smoldering buildings, in the rioting and the looting, is really what's been happening culturally under the watch of many of these Democratic governors, where they've seen their policies that have led to the as you talked about, the dissolution of the family, that core unit of society. And now, look, there's going to be nothing left if we allow them to remain in control.
You're absolutely right, Tony. And words that I've heard you speak just bring me comfort, and I hope that your listeners. And that is, as believers, we can live with complete trust in the promises of God, no matter what happens in the world around us. But we do have an obligation in this world to vote for truth and to vote for those candidates that are protecting the fundamental institutions that have made America in 244 years the most robust, not economy, but the first constitutional republic in all of human history.
Well said. Ken Blackwell, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks need to take Ken's challenge to heart, because we need, as believers, we don't need to operate or respond out of fear or even anxiety. We just need to respond from truth to truth. The fact is, we know what's best for society, because we know what truth is. We know that God has a plan, and he's laid out his plan for mankind. And if we follow with him and we obey him, guess what? We find that that's the beginning of wisdom, the ability to solve so many of these problems. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking with family business owner Scott Carpenter about his perspective on law and order after watching his business burn in Kenosha.
Oh, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has released a new 3-part series titled Three Ways to Read the Bible. In this series, Patrina Mosley, FRC's Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy, shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth through studying and applying the Bible's text. Now's the time to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible and learning what it says about God, humanity, and the power of Scripture. During the season of isolation, devote time to the Lord and seek out His meaning for you. In times of crisis and any time, this blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through His Word. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but your heart. To learn more, visit frcblog.com. That's frcblog.com.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or Parler, it is at T Perkins. All right, as we heard in the previous segment, many are attacking President Trump, calling him a racist because he wants law and order restored in metropolitan areas that have been plagued with rioting. Now, the media is apparently fine with the rioting. It gives them something to talk about. Politicians, at least many of them, are afraid to stop it. But what do the people, what do they think? Those whose lives are being impacted by this lawlessness, what do they have to say? Well, joining me now is family business owner Scott Carpenter to talk about his perspective on law and order after having his business destroyed by rioters in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
I know you had a chance to visit with the president yesterday when he came to Kenosha. And you made a statement. You said you felt like the president, when you had a chance to visit with him for a few moments, that you felt like he understood what you were going through as a business owner, having owned a business, a family business, for over 4 decades.
Yes. Yeah. We really didn't have much time to sit and talk and go into a discussion. He kind of came in a little late. From what I was told, we would be able to do a little bit more of a meet and greet and talk about our business and how we were affected by it. But I believe he got in a little bit later. And the reason why I feel that he knows what we're going through is, he's not just our president. He's also, a business owner. And to have the rug pulled out from underneath your feet, he knows that's got to be just devastating when you start something from ground up. You know, this was a business that my father started 42 years ago in the garage just to make a few extra bucks. And it grew into something much bigger. Not that we're still not, making a whole lot more than just a few extra bucks, but, we're not getting rich over here. But we have a building and inventory and vehicles and, a couple of employees. This really hit us hard.
So, Scott, let me just ask you to share with our listeners, as you saw the video, I mean, you were watching as your building went up in flames. I mean, kind of walk us through that, how what you felt, what the response.
Yeah, that was devastating, watching the protest happening, and then as we're watching people with live feeds streaming online,
to watch them turn and go down the street and see businesses next door to us taking a hit with busted out windows and car windows broken. And at first I thought it was just we had some broken glass. The whole front showroom is all windows. And it's, you know, approximately maybe, maybe about 100 feet wide, somewhere 75 to 100 feet wide. And it's all glass windows. And only one or two were broken. And I thought, oh, that's not bad. But then I got the phone call from my mother telling me that the smoke alarms are going off and the motion detectors are going off. And then my sister calls me, beeps in, and she says, yeah, the building's on fire. I see it. And I'm like, no, it's not. And she goes, yeah, it is. And I look again, and I'm like, sure enough, you could see this small little fire just starting in the corner. And my heart just dropped.
And so the entire building was in your inventory, burnt to the ground.
Yep. The building gone. Everything in it gone.
Now, Scott, you have chosen to respond in a way that many might not. How have you chosen to respond to this?
Well, you know, I wanted to take this horrible hate and anger that was lashed upon us and choose it to give back, you know, with love. And things happen for a reason. You know, God... I read where God can take a riot and turn it into a revival. And we had a revival going on downtown on Sunday. They were doing water baptisms. And I decided to place a sign up because their quote that they were quoting was "No justice, no peace." And I'm sure you've heard of this one before. I put up "No Jesus, no peace." And then "No Jesus, no peace." So I wanted to send that message out there. If you want peace, maybe get some Jesus in you. You get some Jesus involved into your what's going on here, and we can get peace. Destruction is not going to do it, you know, and you have to move forward. And you got to find that forgiveness in your heart and heal, and then you can move forward.
Well, Scott, I commend you in responding in a godlike, Christ-like manner to what has happened to you and to your family. But I would also ask you this, that, you know, while we as individuals, we can and must forgive. But we have our government and our mayors, our governors, our president, those in authority have an obligation to keep order. And what would you like to see happen in these other cities to prevent this from occurring?
Yes, you need law and order. That needs to be. That's just that keeps the peace. If you take law out of it, and then things will run amok. You will see people standing up in the streets having to defend themselves. That's something that is a must. It doesn't have to be as strong as it is, but you got to bring in the armed forces when you got people destroying and burning down the neighborhoods.
There's an obligation that they have to protect our homes, our families, our businesses, and that's not happening in every city, as we saw there in Kenosha. Scott Carpenter, I want to thank you for joining us, and we'll be praying for you and your family as you rebuild your business. And as you trust the Lord, no doubt it's going to be bigger and better than ever. Thanks so much for joining us. Folks, don't go away. We're back after this.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increased pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/sexuality. Again, that's frc.org/sexuality.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com.
With horrifying acceleration in recent years, verified reports of murders, rapes, mutilations, and kidnapping of Christians in Nigeria have persistently increased. These attacks are frequently accompanied by the torching of homes, churches, villages, and agricultural fields. A July 15, 2020 headline reports that over 1,000 Nigerian Christians were killed in the first 6 months of 2020. This is in addition to 11,000 Christians who have been killed since June 2015. News stories about the assaults in Nigeria are rarely reported in mainstream media outlets. But when they are, they're regularly explained away as effects of climate change, local feuds, or religious wars for which both sides bear equal responsibility. For more information about the persecution of Christians in Nigeria, read FRC's publication, The Crisis of Christian Persecution in Nigeria, at frc.org/Nigeria.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. I hope as you listen to some of these interviews, you know, we've talked to the political leaders, but, you know, this conversation with Scott, you know, these riots, they're affecting real people. Now, they may not be in your community yet, but left unchecked, this will spread everywhere. Lawlessness, in fact, I'm going to talk about this tomorrow. I'm going to talk more about this lawlessness and from a biblical perspective. How do we look at this? In fact, Dr. Al Mohler is going to be joining me tomorrow. We talk about this. But this, all the more reason why we need to bring light to the darkness. We need to pray. We need to vote. We need to stand. And I really appreciate Scott's perspective and attitude, one of forgiveness. Now, you know, it's not one of just letting whatever happens in terms of saying, oh, well, you know, we just need to leave the people alone because they had bad childhoods and they were and so they just need to be allowed to do whatever they want. No, that's not what he said. We need our government, our elected officials to uphold the Constitution. They need to do what they are tasked with doing. And one of the most fundamental aspects of leadership, of an elected leader, is the protection of the public. The president, his number one obligation is to defend us, defend America. When it comes to state governors, law and order, that's the number one priority. Because if not, and citizens begin to do that, becomes problematic, turns into anarchy. The wild, wild west. We don't want that. We need to forgive when we've been the victim of these crimes, if you will, but we need to hold those that are allowing it to occur and even fostering the environment in which it happens, hold them accountable. And how do we do that? Well, in America, we vote. And so I want to encourage you, if you're not registered, that you register to vote and you commit to vote. And so I'm going to ask you again, I'm going to ask you probably every day until the election to take the challenge, to pray. Pray for our nation. We've got prayer points that you can find at prayvotestand.org. Pray. Vote. And if you're not registered, you need to register. And there's tools actually at that website, prayvotestand.org. You can register in many cases, in many states, you can register online. You just follow the link over. It'll take you to your state and give you the directions on how to register. And then just commit to vote and then to stand. We've got to stand up. I like the fact that Scott put a sign in his business, or what was left of it, no Jesus, no peace. We don't need to hide the fact that the solution is to pursue the truth of God and uphold that truth, stand for that truth, and not shrink back from it. And if you don't like what you're seeing in communities across this nation, Portland, Kenosha, Seattle, well, we need to vote, because left unchecked, it's going to be coming to a community near you very soon. All right, so what, transitioning now to another topic, what can we detect, or what can we determine from endorsements? What do endorsements, political endorsements of political candidates, what does that tell us about those candidates? What does it suggest their policies and positions might be on certain issues? Well, joining me now to talk more about some of the endorsements that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have racked up thus far is David Clawson, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. David, welcome back to the program again.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, let's talk about some of the endorsements in recent days that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have acquired.
Well, they've acquired quite a few, and it's really a who's who when it comes to the pro-abortion, pro-LGBT, anti-religious groups, Tony. Just a couple of them. You have the Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest LGBT advocacy group and political lobbying organization in the entire country. They've endorsed Joe Biden. Planned Parenthood, the largest provider in America. More babies die at the hands of Planned Parenthood than any organization in the country. They've pledged to spend $45 million this election cycle. They've endorsed Joe Biden. NARAL, Pro-Choice America, one of the largest lobbying and political advocacy groups when it comes to the abortion issue, they've committed to spending $34.7 million on the 2020 election, and they've endorsed Joe Biden. And then other groups, too. The National LGBT Chamber of Commerce, the National Organization for Women, the pro-feminist, pro-abortion group, MoveOn.org, InCitizens United, Indivisible, the Lincoln Project. All of these groups, Tony, have come out in the last few weeks with major endorsements for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And they're not just mobilizing the millions of people who follow them, but they are channeling tens of millions of dollars into the coffers of the DNC and the Biden campaign. So that is who is behind the Biden-Harris ticket right now.
And after a quarter of a century of experience in the political realm, I can tell you that those endorsements do not come without strings. There are reasons that people endorse candidates, and there are expectations when they endorse candidates. I want to just take one of these. This was from last week when you mentioned this 300 LGBTQ XYZ leaders threw their support behind Democratic nominee Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And this is what they said. They said that Biden and Harris would make, quote, the most pro-equality ticket in American history. Now, unpack that for us, because there's a reason that they made that statement, because Joe Biden is on record supporting many, if not all, of their legislative priorities.
Well, that's absolutely true, Tony, and it's important to get this information out there just because, you know, you have groups that want to paint Joe Biden as moderate and a man of decency who represents the mainstream values of the country. And what's really revealing is the platform that the DNC put out just a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, it was really in 2016 was the first time the Democrats fully embraced the whole spectrum of LGBT issues. But in 2020, they have gone even further, promising just a litany of changes. Just looking at the platform, I'll read a couple of them to you, Tony. And the 2020 platform has says that the Biden-Harris administration will appoint senior leaders to coordinate LGBTQ plus issues at the State Department, USAID, which is the agency responsible for civilian foreign aid, and the National Security Council. The platform promises that Democrats won't act the Equality Act, which is legislation that would codify sexual orientation, gender identity into civil rights law, as well as strip Americans of their religious freedom that they have under RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Just so people understand what you're talking about there, this would be someone who, like a doctor,
yes,
who did not want to be forced to do a non-required surgery, a gender reassignment surgery, or it could be a baker that didn't want to be forced to make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple, or even a pastor who did not want to perform a same-sex wedding. The defense has been the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that we don't force people to violate their religious convictions and their religious beliefs. The Equality Act would torpedo all of that.
It would obliterate it, and that's what's so insidious about the Equality Act, which was already passed by the House of Representatives under Speaker Nancy Pelosi. But what it would do is it would, again, codify these very contested categories, put it at the level of religion and race. And I've read the bill. It specifically says that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which provides people a defense against having to go against their conscience, go against their beliefs on marriage and human sexuality, it says that they will no longer have that defense. And for the first time, the 2020 Democrat platform is now calling for the immediate passage of the Equality Act. And there's one other thing, Tony, looking through the platform. The platform promises to guarantee transgender students access to facilities based on their gender identity. So this would be undoing something that the Trump administration did, which would allow those who identify as transgender to have access to the locker rooms, changing facilities, bathrooms of their choice. And probably one of the more problematic things, the platform puts forward, is that it would require federal health plans to include gender confirmation surgery and hormone therapy as part of the federal health care plan. So all of these are baked in to the 2020 Democratic platform, which is precisely why all of these groups have rushed to give Joe Biden and Kamala Harris their unqualified, enthusiastic endorsement.
Yeah, it's interesting in their platform, and I've read through it, that when they talk about religious freedom in very limited capacities, they talk about it, but they draw the line on where it would impact this agenda of the LGBT community.
It absolutely does, and it's interesting when you think of a hierarchy of values. You know, we have in the First Amendment of the Constitution certain things that are absolutely protected in this country: freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to peaceably assemble, and right there in the First Amendment is the freedom of religion. And yet what the Democrat platform does, and this really gets to what their worldview does, it inverts that. And the first prize, one of their first rights, is really sexual freedom, sexual liberty. And that will always trump religious freedom, according to the new platform that the Democrats have put forward.
Yeah. In fact, their language says that they reject broad religious exemptions, which is actually religious freedom. They reject broad religious exemptions for businesses, medical providers, social services, social service agencies — those are the adoption agencies — and others. So they say, yeah, we support religious freedom. However, you can't use it. If it in any form or fashion would infringe upon this redefinition of human sexuality, we will not allow you to have religious freedom. That's what their platform says.
it's what the platform says. And what's really, you know, the other side of the coin, Tony, is what the RNC put forward. And, personally, I wish the RNC would have put forward a new platform, just giving a fresh defense of the party's values. But what they did do, though, is extend the 2016 platform through 2024. And part of that platform that the Republicans are now running on is a very pro-religious liberty, pro-family, pro-values platform. They condemn the Obergefell decision that legalized same-sex marriage as a lawless. They endorsed the First Amendment Defense Act, which would provide individuals and businesses a protection against having to go against their deeply held beliefs when it comes to exercising their faith. And it affirms that every child deserves a mother and a father. And then the Trump administration, or the campaign, put out a core priorities list, which also affirms religious freedom and has some really nice language defending life, which is obviously consistent with what we've seen so far in 3.5 years of the Trump administration. So I think it's really important for all Americans, but especially evangelical Christians, who the Biden campaign is courting. But it's really important for us to be very clear with the different visions that have been put forward, especially on issues that are so dear to social conservative Christians.
And by the way, folks, you've heard me say it before, and I'll repeat it again. These platforms do matter because the parties follow them on average about 80% of the time, based upon studies that have been conducted over the last four decades. You mentioned the issue of life. Let's go back for a moment to the endorsements. Planned Parenthood endorsing Joe Biden, Kamala Harris. There's a clear connection with why when you look at the Democratic Party platform.
Oh, yeah, yes, Tony, absolutely. The Democrat platform, I didn't think the 2016 platform could get worse. You know, the 2016 platform was the first time a major political party said that we should get rid of the Hyde Amendment, which prevents taxpayer money from funding abortion. Well, the 2020 platform has come out and says that they should get rid of the Hyde Amendment. They need to they want to codify Roe v. Wade into law. They want to reinstate the funding to Planned Parenthood that the Trump administration has taken away through HHS and even further the funding. And so the platform is calling for these things, which I will add is very consistent, especially with Kamala Harris's voting record in the United States Senate. You know, Tony, you and I have talked about this. Just this year, Senator Harris voted against the pain-capable bill that would have made abortion illegal after the fifth month of pregnancy when babies can feel pain. She voted against that. And then the same day, she voted against the Born Alive Survivors Protection Act, which simply said that babies who survive abortion should be entitled to the same care that any other baby would be entitled to. So she's consistently voted against every common sense pro-life measure. And right. So that's enshrined now in the platform, which is why Planned Parenthood and NARAL have pledged tens of millions of dollars to the Biden-Harris ticket, because this ticket stands for the values of Planned Parenthood.
There are strings attached, policy strings, no doubt, to these endorsements. David Clawson, thanks so much for joining us today. I know we're going to have plenty of time to talk more about these policy comparisons and where the two parties and the candidates stand. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks, thank you for joining us. Remember, go to PrayVoteStand.org. Take the challenge. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234. 7234.